Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos,
that's me,
and the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's great to have your company once again, and also the company of my two wonderful co-hosts. Dave's just travelled 30 hours from overseas. He's going to tell us a little bit about where he's been. But first, we'll start with Kate. Kate, how are you?
I'm really well, thanks, Pete. And I don't even need to talk about how I'm going. I just want Dave to promise our listeners he'll tell them the top three strange things that he ate when he was in Kathmandu.
We've heard about it before we started recording. So just give us a snapshot there, Dave, of what you ate whilst you were in Nepal.
Well, look, we ate a lot of wonderful foods, and our staff and the management team and all the team of our outsourcing company was so welcoming. It was just unbelievable. You know, had experiences like traditional dinners at one of our staff's house with her and her family, and we ate at lunches and saw temples and went up mountains and, you know, nearly toppled off the edge of them in a bus. And well, there's some extreme foods to eat over there, and we were willing and able or open to trying some of the different foods. And
just to be clear, like, these are prepared very carefully. They're delicacies. They're, you know, locally, they're highly revered. It's just that we're not so adventurous here, and I was fascinated. But you listed some stuff that, hats off to you, Dave. I thought it was very cool that you gave it a try.
Yeah, look, there's a myriad of spices and different types of foods, but we also had some things like fried goat's lung, buffalo spinal cord, which is a bit more extreme. And they don't eat cows over there because cows are sacred. Fried bone marrow, which, those three items probably weren't my favourite, let's say, on the trip. But, you know, it was such an amazing experience to see how the Nepali and our team live their lives day to day and how connected they are to each other and their families and their food, and how it's such a huge part of the social fabric is their meals. And yeah, look, it was a really, really special trip to have gone on. And, you know, the connection to our 12 staff over there was really, yeah, really strengthened. And our understanding of how they live as well. So, and
it was partly the whiskey at night though, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, the first night we got in it to our hotel in bed at 2 a.m. on the first night, in at work the next day, and our staff start at 6 a.m. and that means 11:15 in Australia. So we had the first day, and then it was Cup Day over here, so we thought we'd take them on a retreat. And yeah, that was a very good, enjoyable night, and dinner and some whiskey and music, and three of our team play the guitar, and so sing-alongs and playing the guitar. It was, yeah, some beautiful views. It was pretty amazing.
Sounds like a terrific cultural experience, Dave. So you put that on the list again on the calendar for another trip in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And you know, just to keep being able to visit our team, and hopefully we'll get some of our Australian team over there as well. So a big shout-out to our Nepalese team for being so amazingly welcoming during our time there. And we've come home with a whole bag full of gifts, to be honest. And and Sarah and I, as you guys saw, they got us some traditional, I can't remember the name of the clothing, but so we, on our last night, were out for dinner in the traditional clothing, which was quite eye-opening for many of the locals who wanted to stop us and get photos with us and different things. So, yeah,
excellent.
It's a great time.
Excellent.
You're off tomorrow, Pete.
Yeah, so tomorrow off to the UAE. First we go to Abu Dhabi with the students on our international property study tour. So the students have been doing research already. So the idea is, for those of you into property, you'll understand the term highest and best use. So they've already done some market research. Last night, actually, in class, each student had to give us a property market update of a particular sector. whether it was residential, office, industrial, retail. And the previous week they did some research on planning, like what is allowed. So the students have already worked out what is allowed. The students have done research on which markets are emerging, which markets are contracting. And when they get over there, they'll physically see the development site. They'll speak to the developer, the architect, the town planner, and then they've got to work out, well, what's the most profitable option for this particular site? So, yeah, we're all really looking forward to it because we haven't been for 3 years. 3 years ago we went to Portugal. This time around we're going somewhere different. Yeah, very much looking forward to it.
Sounds very incredible. Much.
You Absolutely. Did well to get that into the budget each year, Pete. Marvellous work.
Yeah, well, we want to give the students a truly international experience. Yeah, just because, I mean, most of them are international students and some of them are going to work in Australia, but, you know, working in the Abu Dhabi market or Dubai or even Lisbon, you know, it's a global market. Like even in Australia, typically most people that are going to buy it or lease it, Australians. But, you know, over there it is significantly different. So being able to take what you've learnt in class and put that into a different context, you know, then you find out who's really learnt their stuff.
Are you flying Emirates?
Yes, we are, yeah.
Well, have a listen because we just got back from flying Emirates via Dubai and you know how most flights have a talkover sort of interviewer who he interviews one of the top developers in Dubai for quite a period of time. It was quite interesting.
Well, I'll watch out for that. That's terrific.
We love hearing from our listeners and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form.
All right, enough of our exploits overseas. Let's get into the Australian property market update, in particular the residential property market. So, Dave, how about if you kick us off with what's happened to dwelling values over the last month, quarter, and a year?
Yeah, thanks, Pete. Firstly, the rate of value decline is slowing in all cities but Brisbane. And I suspect that may have peaked now also. So, whether that lasts or not, we shall see, or whether there's still more pain to come economically that could flow back into the property market, we'll see. But there is a clear trend of the rate of value decline reducing. Brisbane, yeah, was the standout from a negative perspective of -2% for the month and now surpassed Sydney as the biggest fall for the quarter at -5.4, just ahead of Sydney at -5.3. But I think the change of the policy around stamp duty and grouping stamp duty across the country, the sort of the negative fallout of that will curtail, I think, some of what was happening in Brisbane. Also, another, I guess, mini story is the combined regionals are now falling faster than the combined cities. So that's happening only about 18 months after I predicted it.
All predictions will come correct at some stage.
That's right.
Totally take your point, Dave. It's a slight shift, but yeah, it's still very small. I mean, for the month, 1.1 we're down for the capitals and 1.4 for the combined regional. But if we look at the quarter, it's only tiny, it's incremental 0.1%. And then when we look at annualised, still the regions are very much in front and combined capitals are in negative territory.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just tipped over in that, and we'll keep watching that space to see the trajectory moving forward. So nationally, in terms of over the last 12 months, we've actually hit negative territory for the first month. So it's the first time over the rolling 12 months that property values are actually less. So that's something for everyone for perspective. You know, nationally, property values, because of the rises in the first 6 months of the last 12 months, we still hadn't tipped over into negative territory over the last 12 months. So we're only down 0.9% over the 12 months nationally.
That's not what the media says.
No. I was going to bring up that point. I just want to reinforce what Dave said. You know, to keep everything in perspective, property prices have dropped less than 1% in the last 12 months. So despite all the negative media, you know, things are okay. All right, if you're in Sydney, it's dropped 8.6. But if you're in many, you know, if you're in Brisbane or in Adelaide or in Perth or in Darwin or in Canberra, five out of the capital cities, you're still up for the year. So you're still pretty good.
And I'm not glossing over 8.6. That would feel significant by any measure, but it's not 20 or 30%.
No, and it's coming off huge highs, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Sydney, and we're going to talk about the peak to trough through COVID next, but Sydney increased 28% during COVID, and it's dropped 10%, which is quite significant, but you're still ahead. You know, you're still ahead.
And we need to remember what median means. And if you have a collective of part of the investors or owners out there that are selling certain price point properties, that will have an impact too. Now, we can't underestimate the impact of rental reforms and all of the things that are making investors think twice about whether property is the asset class that they want to be in. An investor stock typically isn't in the multi-million dollars in terms of unit prices. They're usually lower priced stocks. So we also have to have a think about that. You know, what are some of the things that can influence certain price points having more sales than other price points? And I'm not for a minute saying that there's a correlation yet with investors, but I think that's something that we all do need to keep an eye on, because median means just that, it's the mid data point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Dave, we mentioned COVID. Anything jumps out at you in regards to property prices during COVID, to the peak, after the peak?
Look, I think on some level you could look at, okay, Sydney's from its peak has actually declined 10% and Melbourne minus 6. So if you look at the two major capital cities, they're declining proportionally to the growth they had. So Melbourne's growth was 17%, Sydney's was 27%. So around 60% and give or take, a bit higher than 60%. Melbourne's growth was relative to Sydney, and the decline is about the same sort of margin. So that's one thing that I notice. The sort of the flow is happening in that sort of order where the major capital cities tend to move first, and then it flows down to the less populated or the less high value capital cities. And we know that's what happens in a city of its own. We know the most valuable properties go up, are the early leading indicators, so they tend to grow up the most and come down the most. And we're seeing that play out in the capital cities, the major cities as well. So there's some of the things that we can note from that.
Yeah, and just like, again, to put it into perspective, if we look at the big picture, in the last 12 months, nationally property prices have dropped 0.9%. And in regards to COVID, nationally they went up almost 29%. And they've come down 6%. So during the last 2.5 years, we're still well in front. Yes, unfortunately for those people who've bought, say, in the last several months, some of them would be in negative equity, but that all depends on which capital city that you were in. But again, shows that property prices did not always go up. This time around, they're falling because of steeply increasing interest rates. But it's promising to see that the last two interest rate rises were only 0.25%. Instead of 0.5%. So it's not over, but I think the worst is over so far as interest rate rises, or certainly the rate of increase is concerned.
Pete, you asked about COVID, and I think the pale grey section down the bottom of this chart says it all. Combined capitals up 25.5% and decline from recent peak down 6.5, but combined regions 41.6 and down less than 5%. It was the regions that were absolutely spurred on by COVID. We all know that. And I think that's the big story. And that's what we'll remember when we look back through the history books. We've had very different market conditions and such dazzling different performance than we've ever seen before when it comes to capitals versus regions.
Certainly. Yeah. COVID, there was an exodus from the big capital cities to the smaller capital cities and also regional areas, and they have benefited greatly so far as COVID is concerned. Whether we go back to the way it was, I'm not sure.
No, that's what remains to be seen, isn't it? Yeah. The structural change because of remote working and the ability to work more from regional areas or further away from the main CBD.
If I could just quickly interject, you know, before in the intro we were talking about going to the UAE. In Australia, I'm concerned about commercial property because of the work from home. In the UAE, there's virtually no work from home. Everyone is expected to come to the office. Hence why there is such a very tight vacancy, right? They're just desperate for more office buildings because people have been told, you want a job, you need to come to work. Whereas in Australia and many other parts of the world, it's quite different.
And just aside from the work from home component, we also know that we've had more purchases out there that have been second dwelling. So people weren't spending the money on travel, they spent it on a second dwelling, and they were able to look at far-fetched places that were, you know, at a price point. And will that remain? Will people hold on to their holiday homes that are a long way from home? Yet to be seen.
Kate, you want to talk us through the rents? There's some striking results here in rents, both for houses and units.
You know, Pete, I actually feel guilty when I talk about rent now because I'm an investor and I'm, you know, obviously benefiting from rising rents and tighter vacancy rates. But we've got an issue on our hands here and it's pretty horrendous. And if you just have a look on the rental tab on a search engine and check out the availability of rentals at a certain price point in any given area, you'll get a bit of a shock if you haven't done that exercise for a while. And I'm fearful for the situation that we've all created, and we're not reversing this yet. And I know I harp on about rental reforms, but disincentivizing investors is going to be a pretty nasty cocktail for this situation that's getting worse by the minute. We keep looking at these charts. They're not really improving. So annual change in rents, houses, there's not a capital city that's under 5% here. So Darwin's the smallest rate of change at 5.6. Brisbane is 13.6. Then we have a look at units. Melbourne is now up to 13.7, and that line is pointing to the sky. We're not seeing it slowing down at all. And in fact, it's Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, Perth that are all pointing to the sky. So imagine trying to get a unit as a rental in these capital cities when you're facing those types of price changes. I'm pretty fearful. And look down at the yield. A lot of those boxes there are green, meaning that we've got an increasing rental yield. Now, that's also a factor of prices coming off, but still, I've not seen charts like this in a long, long time.
No. Like, I did some research for Pippa a while ago, and because people were talking about rents were going crazy, and they were, but for the previous 9 years, they'd done virtually nothing. And when you look back in history, rents have not grown at the same rate as property prices. So, and as a result, our yields are lower. But yeah, over the last 12 to 18 months, it has just been phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal.
I don't mind sharing a little bit of what I think is absolute lunacy to illustrate the point around some of the things that are disincentives to investors. So first and foremost, if you're an investor and you've got a tenant in your property on a fixed lease in Victoria and you decide economically that you want to sell the property, once you're given a notice that you're planning to sell, they can cut their lease and leave with 14 days notice. That's pretty horrendous. If that happens at a time when it's not so suitable to sell, so for example, just before Christmas, then the landlord has to prep the property, get it ready for sale, then have a campaign. They've got a vacant property, they've got no rent. Over a Christmas period, that can be a real challenge. Now, I know someone who's going through this. Now, if things don't go well and you decide to withdraw from selling for a while, you have to wait 6 months before you can resell the property. And if you want to sell it sooner than that, you've got to take it to the tribunal. Now, try and get into a tribunal for something like that. We've got a lot of onerous things going on. This is just, you know, it's beyond the gas compliance, electrical compliance, and the vacating someone for no reason and allowing any pets that they want. It's really tough. And I get it, looking after a tenant. But if landlords are feeling like they've completely lost power and now they're losing financially, we've got a problem on our hands. And Victoria is not an easy state to navigate, but there are other states that are making noises about doing same. We've heard murmurs from Queensland about fixing rents. I'm just shaking my head and wondering what they're thinking, because it's not going to help the end user.
That is a great example of really poor policy.
Yep.
That is disincentivizing new stock going on the market.
Yeah.
Makes it really hard to sell. So obviously, you know, one of the things that we know from the correlation between listing numbers and growth in values is the less listings, the higher prices go. That policy is disincentivizing the selling of properties. On a large scale, you know, if we look macro, what they're doing there, you know, we're throwing money at first-time buyers. They're trying to push up the number of people who own their own property, but that just makes it harder and harder for the renters. Now they're trying to get the superannuation funds to finance build to rents, which then means corporate money starts owning lots of investment properties. Do we really want that as a nation and make locking out even more people from being able to buy property because they're now competing with big corporates and conglomerates like happens in a lot of other countries? You know, with our egalitarian approach to life, we actually like the idea of average people, mums and dads, to have the opportunity to own property in Australia. So we're heading down a bit of a, you know, slippery slope here with some of the changes that are supposed to be helping. But as we can see, you know, with vacancy rates so low and rents, you know, rents rising rapidly, you know, and those types of policies that you've just mentioned, Kate, in the fine print, that hasn't been realised and the negative impact that it's having.
Yeah. And when we get to listing numbers, I actually want to talk about the segmentation and what is out there, because the numbers on paper look better than what they really are. And it's because a lot of stock is the stock that people don't want. It's the stock that can't be renovated because you can't get a tradesperson through, or it's an investor who is asset rich, cash flow poor, who can't work out all of this compliance. They can't fund it, so they have to sell. So we've got a disproportionate amount of stock floating around that needs renovating to be either be habitable or to be rent ready. And there's too much of it, and there's no appetite for picking up a renter, for picking up a renovator. So we do have a problem out there, but I'll go into detail about that because I've got a bit of an update that is quite relevant.
That's coming through in the finance numbers too. I mean, if you look at construction finance, it's fallen off a cliff. You know, it's minus sort of 30-odd% over the last 12 months. Now there's less owner-occupier, first-time buyer and investor finance, but it's about 10% over the last 12 months. When we've looked over history, we've seen consistently one of the biggest drivers of when the market's boomed has been government stimulus.
Definitely.
Yes.
First-time buyer, NRAS, stamp duty concessions, whatever. Yeah, certainly a big one, yeah.
As you said, rents haven't been keeping up with the capital growth, and so they've been underperforming with the research you've done, inflation for 9 or 10 years. So on some level, we are getting a reversion to normalisation with rents actually having some increase, and that is really long overdue. So some of it is logical in terms of the rental increase, but that's very different to the policies that we're talking about and that have been put in place.
Yeah, certainly you're right there, Dave. The rents are playing catch up over the long term, but the vacancy rates, you know, to follow on from Kate's point, you know, how, I mean, it's not just, I mean, I don't know if we've seen less investors getting into the market, but I've certainly seen investors getting out of the market for a variety of reasons. So in the end, it's just less rental stock. And the vacancy, even in, you know, Sydney and Melbourne, which have the highest amount, 1.3% and 1.4% respectively, like the average is 2%. Or every other capital city is either 1% or less. So it is, you know, in simple terms, it is very hard for tenants to find a property, hence why property prices rentals are increasing so significantly. And the problem with the supply of new rental properties is it's very slow. You can't click your fingers and say, let's bring on, you know, 100,000 rental properties. You got to build them. And in an environment where there's a shortage of building materials and a shortage of labour, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
And very high numbers of international migration now.
Yep.
Tap that tap being turned on.
Yeah.
It's not getting any better in the short term, is it?
No.
So we're going to keep seeing those yields rise.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
All right, Kate, you mentioned listings before. I found something quite extraordinary here, but how about you lead us off?
Well, what I think, there's two things that I think are extraordinary, and then I'll overlay that with my comment about the segmentation. First and foremost, for new listings, this is the most dismal spring season we've had in 5 years, and it's a starkly obvious chart showing that we're really running low. And then when I look at total listings, so that's all the old stuff that's been floating around forever, we're still under all of the past years. Now, it looked like we crept up a little bit with total listings a few months ago, but it's been absorbed. That's
the problem. The patient is dead. It's a flat line. It's a flat line.
It is a flat line. It is.
Isn't it? What you were saying.
Ten months. That's a flat line total listings this year.
Yeah. So what we're saying is that all of the available listings, the new ones, the mediocre ones, the ones that have been floating around for over a year, they're low. But the new listings that we're expecting for spring haven't happened. And that's because vendors are going, it's not a great time to sell. Also, a lot of vendors made decisions to do things last year. So we saw, you know, a lot of sales kind of brought forward. But also the vendors that do want to do something are sitting back saying, well, if I sell, what can I buy? There's no stock. We've got classic chicken and egg. So that's my insight, Pete. And when you overlay it with the fact that so much of the stock that is floating around is either compromised or needing significant renovation, we actually don't have a lot of tip-top stuff that's ready to move into, and that's why those prices are holding firm.
Yeah, for me it's the graph on the right-hand side, which is total listings, and as you rightly pointed out, Kate, the last 4 years, and I'm sure probably for the last 40 years, listings go up over spring, but this year they're not. And, you know, I think combined with really low unemployment, the low number of properties for sale is going to put a safety net underneath property prices, so there will be no collapse. I mean, the fear is, you know, people won't be able to pay their mortgage because interest rates are going up significantly. However, because unemployment is so low, most people won't have to sell because they've lost their job. Yes, they're going to have to cut back on spending somewhere else to put more into their mortgage, but most people won't have to sell because of unemployment.
You make a really good point. Now, with that floor under price falls because of limited stock and still, I'm not going to say healthy buyer demand, but active buyers out there.
And low vacancy rates and growing yields.
Yeah, I think what we will see is some encouraging prices that will bring some vendors back. And I'm hopeful that, look, we might have a bit of a mediocre spring market, but I've been chatting to agents and we might actually have a late little buzz of activity. We might see a burst of, in particular Melbourne and Sydney, some December auctions. I'm expecting that, but I also think that we'll have a little bit more stock in Feb.
Well, if you look to, as you said, the phrase brought forward, demand was brought forward last year. And that's through different incentives and, you know, really low rates and throwing money at people. And we know when the market's flying, more people sell properties. And so, you know, what's happening this year? Well, the market's struggling because rates have gone up and so less people are selling. And it's evening out over a number of years. And we, you know, we have a calendar year that we look at. If you look at it over a longer period of time, that's just, you know, making up for the extra numbers of the previous 12 months, really. And if you average those couple of years out, well, then stays around the same levels. It's historical.
Yeah. And in terms of metrics, I've chatted to a couple of agents that I would identify as high-performing, consistent, long-term agents who have, you know, been in the game for over a decade and have had great, strong results in their team. And all of their gross commissions are substantially down. That's just due to listing numbers.
So whilst we're still on listings, so SQM has some data on total listings, new listings, old listings, and in particular distressed listings. Is there anything that jumps out at you, Kate or Dave, about any of those stats? While you're thinking, there is one for me. Like, I looked at the Tasmanian number and distressed listings are up 89%. When I first looked at that, I thought, oh, my God, Tasmania's headed for a big property crash. But
look, you know, at the numbers, though.
From a very low number. Like in October, they had 36 distressed sellings. Last year, in October this year, 68. Well, you know, an extra 30 mortgagee sales is not going to bring forward the collapse of the Tasmanian property market. So we have to be very careful there.
I was down there and it was absolutely beautiful. But the reality is the prices are quite high now, and to dedicate a budget that is required to buy in an exciting part of Tasmania, you've got to be prepared to go down with a checkbook and write a pretty big check. And I think people are looking at it saying, well, you know, Melbourne's not so bad anymore. The city's not in lockdown. I mean, there was a lot of activity in Tassie to escape the mainland and to escape the lockdowns.
Yeah, I mean, if we look, Hobart's coming off a really high median price. You know, they're the only city to increase total listings. They have got higher distressed listings more than the other capital cities. They're coming off extreme highs. And it's a bit of an adjustment phase that's going on in Hobart right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
The next thing we're talking about is the number of dwelling sales. And I did see a chart from Tim Lawless of CoreLogic. And thank you, Tim, for doing that research, because I've been trying to rack my brains for the last few months, because I'm sure that consumer confidence has a big impact on the property market. And I just kept thinking it was about property price. And I tried to lag it. I thought, oh, well, consumer confidence is down, but that won't appear in property price for a month or two or maybe 3 months. But Tim hit the nail on the head. He found a very strong correlation between consumer confidence and the number of property sales, which makes sense. If you're happy and confident, you're more likely to put your property up for sale. And then, of course, if you're happy and confident, you're more likely to go out and buy a property. So thanks very much for that, Tim. But I reckon Dave, a couple of weeks ago, rightly pointed out that we had a record number of sales in 2021, and that's obvious by this particular graph, that pink line at the top. So we just bought forward a lot of sales. So, you know, it's no surprise that this year we're below the five-year average. But it just got like everything in the economy, or most things in the economy, and property is obviously a big part of the economy, it all goes in cycles.
Look, it's a big connection. I've mentioned this a while back to what's happening with inflation as well. We were constrained. We weren't able to travel. We were locked up in our homes. We saved more money than ever on record. And everyone is getting out and spending. And we're spending irrespective of the fact that rates are going up, because lots of people have saved a lot of money, and we haven't been able to travel.
It's totally YOLO.
You only live once, exactly. So
I'm going overseas tomorrow, but uni's paid for that. But at the same time, we're organising our overseas holiday for next year, and I'm not going to tell you what the figures are, but I can tell you it's significantly more expensive than we went overseas 3 years ago. But because we've been saving, or we've made money in property, if you want to travel, so be it.
The analogy that comes to mind, we've blown a balloon up,
but
we haven't tied it off. And now we've let it go and the air's coming out, and it'll come out in about 3 to 6 months. Inflation will start to fall off and rates will start to come down again.
Yeah. All right. Consumer sentiment, one of my favourite tables here. Westpac Melbourne Institute Consumer Sentiment. Dave, what can you tell us about this?
Firstly, most things have deteriorated, you know, across the board. So we've got family finances versus a year ago, family finances next 12 months, economic conditions next 12 months, economic conditions next 5 years, time to buy a major household item, time to buy a dwelling. Unemployment expectations index is the big outlier. So people are feeling very safe in their jobs. That jumped up to 111 from 99. Now, unfortunately, I think that's going to change. House price expectations index and interest rate expectation index, they are all what makes up the consumer sentiment index with Westpac. So, yeah, look, I thought time to buy a dwelling index, I still think it's on its way to 100, but it had a blip because obviously people are going, look, rates are rising. I don't think it's as good of a time, even though prices are coming off. The rates going up is offsetting that. So that has blipped back down to 85, Broadly speaking, people are feeling a bit more negative about most things other than their security in the job. But unfortunately, rates are going up and unemployment, with inflation going so high, unemployment will start to fall and people will start to lose jobs. That's historically what occurs when you have to tackle high inflation.
I concur with Dave. I think the scary indicator there is that people are pretty comfortable in their jobs. And while we all want to be comfortable, we've got an RBA that's trying to tackle inflation, and we've got people flying in the face of that saying, well, no, I've got job security. So, yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, you're our finance expert on this panel. What can you tell us about people borrowing money over the last month or year?
Look, basically the numbers continue to fall. Less people are borrowing money, less people are buying property, rates are going up. So people are borrowing less because their serviceability is less. That's the high-level story.
The one that worries me is the personal loans. They're up 10%. And personal loans are horrible. They're unsecured. They're higher interest repayment rates, and that's usually a sign of difficult financial difficulty within a household unit when someone's taking on a personal loan.
You're right. That's jumped 10% over the last 12 months, so that could be a sign that people are having to tap into higher cost, more risky debt. The other big concern, which, you know, will play out as we were just talking about over the next 12 to 24 months, is because construction was brought forward through all the government stimulus, it's fallen off the back of the truck and, you know, it's down 33% over the last 12 months. That's not going to help with low vacancy rates because we're not building any new property. You know, that problem is not going away with low vacancy rates and increasing rents probably. Be careful what you wish for, government. More and more people owning homes, which ultimately you want, but you generally have to come through renting. But, you know, people need a place to rent where they're not going to have a place to rent.
All right, Doug, continuing with the finance. So the bond yields, are they giving us a strong indication where the cash rate might top out?
Well, look, what we're starting to see is the numbers not fluctuating as much. You know, they're sitting closer to, well, the three-year bond yield sitting in and around that 3.5%, the 10-year bond yield close to that 3.8. So I think, you know, as the rate of increases have slowed down, we're hopefully getting closer towards the peak inflation, towards the top, where it starts to topple over. So we're currently at 2.85%. There'll be a meeting in December, which we expect will be 0.25, so take us to 3.1. They don't meet in January. February will probably start to have some new data out that hopefully shows things starting to flatten. Let's see, and that say another 0.25, that's 3.35. So, you know, we're probably looking somewhere most people would think between 3.5% to 4%. It is likely to top out, but, you know.
I'm intrigued for this December rate call. And the reason I say that is December's always been a bit of a critical month because you'll get traders and, you know, we've got Christmas shopping to look forward to if you're a trader. And it's usually a bit of an indication about just how dire things are. And if we do have a rate increase, which we're expecting for December, what will the washout be with Christmas spending? And what will the new data look like? It will be a really interesting call. I dread it for traders, but it might be the rate increase that really does bite.
Yeah, yeah. We might have much less spending in December than normally.
Yeah.
Pity about the lag in data. That won't come through.
It's not helpful, is it?
No.
Not great.
All right. So watch this space and let's see what happens. But a lot of people are talking about another 0.25% increase in December, as Dave just mentioned. And then hopefully the RBA has a really close look over January before their meeting in February, because then they'll have lots of extra data to decide whether they increase again. All right, unemployment. Yes, we've talked about it already, how it is very low, but it's probably as low as it's going to go with international migration increasing and international students also coming back, because let's not forget international students, many of them don't just come here to study, but they also get jobs, you know, whether it's hospitality or even like internships or paid work experience in their chosen profession. We've got many extra people coming in over the next 12 months to take up those job vacancies.
Yeah, look, it pretty much stayed at the same level, didn't it?
There's
not much to report.
That's right. Not much to report about there.
Yeah.
Now, inflation, I did hear, Dave, that the RBA has upgraded their inflation cap at 8%. Before they were talking 7-point-something and now it's 8%. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when we did our mid-year predictions, I said probably could end up above 8%. Simply because of the trajectory it was going and that all predictions had underestimated. And at that stage, you know, the predictions were at 7 to 7.5 and consistently everyone had been underestimating where things were going to go. So I had expected it would probably hit above 8. I'm hoping that somewhere in the 8s is where it'll cap out and we'll start to see it flip over next year. But there are small signs, unfortunately, that there's some structural change to expectations around inflation being embedded. So I don't think it's going to be as easy to get it back to 2 to 3% as, you know, the powers that be might have hoped. But I also don't think that's the end of the world either, because we had been stuck in a bit of a structurally low inflation environment. So I don't think it'll hurt for inflation to be, you know, slightly above that sort of 2-3% target range for a little period of time.
Well, I think it probably will hit 8% by the end of the year. I do see when they break it down into the various categories that the inflation in housing is really leading the rest of the pack.
It is, yeah. I was just thinking the same, Pete. We've got transport, food and non-alcoholic beverages and housing all above 9%. And they're the significant figures there. And what I see is chicken and egg. I mean, those are the things, particularly transport and food and non-alcoholic beverages. They're difficult because of supply chain woes, and we need transport and food and non-alcoholic beverages, so we don't have a choice to participate in purchasing all of those goods and services. So we're a little bit hamstrung in terms of, you know, how much control we have over our spending when it's the essential items that we have to buy that are leading the charge.
Very true. Very true. So we'll see what happens. You know, if inflation continues to go up, unfortunately, so do interest rates. But we won't get a clearer picture for a few months yet as to what's going to happen. A lot depends on overseas, you know, in particular Russia, Ukraine, China opening up properly to increase the supply of materials. So there's a lot of balls up in the air, a lot that the Australian government can't control. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. All right, so please don't go away, listeners. We've got our gold nuggets coming up with Kate and Dave.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
I want to talk to all of the buyers out there that are thinking of doing something, whether they're buying home or thinking of investing. If we segment the market and we have a look at where some of the price falls are a bit more evident and where the opportunities are, and I always maintain we don't want to buy a rotten bag of apples, we want a great apple. But there are two kinds of good apples floating around out there in our market at the moment. The first one is first home buyer stock, especially first home buyer properties that are going under the hammer or could be bought unconditionally at an advantage, because first home buyers are super jittery. They haven't been through interest rate increases before. So we have seen some great opportunities there. But also for anyone who is thinking about development longer term and looking for something that they could develop in 5 or 10 years, there are some great land banking opportunities out there. Obviously, the key is to find a property that you can rent out now with minimal effort to get it rent ready. But I'm seeing some incredible sites going at some significant discounts to what we were looking at in the past couple of years.
Thank you for that, Kate. Dave, your gold nugget?
My gold nugget is that I think the property market has become a bit of a leading indicator. So the property market started to slow before even rates started to increase. And the rate of decline in the property market was faster earlier. And even though we've had much more, you know, the rates are obviously a lot higher, it started to slow down. I think property market will be a leading indicator when things are starting to turn. So the property market will start to pick up again once rates have stopped increasing before we see significant changes coming through in the economic data and inflation really starting to come down. But it'll be a sign that it's about to happen. And once again, when we turn out of this and rates start to come down, I think the property market will have already come off the bottom and be starting to move rapidly. So, you know, if you're looking to make a property decision, I think be very watchful of that. You know, if you're trying to hear when the bell rings, make sure you don't wait too long.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Dave. And thank you, Kate. And thank you, listeners, for your time once again this week. And we look forward to your company next week. Bye for now.
Hi there. It's Anne-Marie from Property Planning Australia here. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the topics discussed, take a listen to episodes number 8, Interpreting Data to Uncover an Outstanding Property and Location, and How to Sort the Gold from the Lies, Damn Lies and Statistics. Episode 12, property cycle management. Why now is always the best time to buy if it suits your personal economy and you have a long-term property plan. Episode 19, time in the market versus timing the market. Episode 155, plotting Australian property market movements from 1970 to now. The impacts of recessions, inflation, financial deregulation, population growth, unemployment rates, and analysing what could disrupt the drivers of price increases. And episode 158, how interest rate cycles have impacted the property market since 1990 when the RBA first started targeting the cash rate, and some predictions on what will happen this time.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bakos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.